White case?
I'll mention that.
The court is aware from the record in this case, Mr. White was not charged and convicted of conspiracy. And all these other sales of drugs to these other individuals were not overt acts to a conspiracy. They all came in after the fact at sentencing. He was tried and convicted on one discrete act of possession with the intent to distribute crack cocaine in August of 2000. But we've got acts predating and postdating that act of conviction by several years in both cases, stretching in on the one hand back to 1994 and on the other hand as far ahead as 2003. So in effect, Mr. White is being sentenced for being a drug dealer. Clearly they wanted him badly. The sting was set up to get him. They got
but
him.
I don't understand. You say such police, I'm looking at your summary of argument on page 12 of your piece, say such police conduct may not qualify as sentencing entrapment or sentencing manipulation. It does violate principles of due process and fundamental fairness. Well, I don't understand. We've said that sentencing entrapment is not a defense. Where does due process come in?
Well, there are sister circuits which have indicated that that's something the court can consider on review when the conduct appears outrageous enough.
What's outrageous about it? I don't understand you.
Well,
what's the outrage?
It seems, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
He is a drug dealer on a large scale. And so it's not as if he's reluctant to deal in excess of 50 grams or anything like that. So I don't know what's...
Well, then why not just get him on powder cocaine, which is what he supposedly typically dealt.
Well, he seems quite willing to he's done crack also. It wasn't just this transaction.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's not as if he has an aversion to crack, right? So,
is it your position that when a government agent sting knows that a defendant is selling types of drugs, one of which penalty, that it's obliged to lesser penalized of the two drugs?
I think it's something that needs to be examined under the totality of the circumstances, Your Honor. It's not just the type of drug, but this informant was specifically encouraged to attempt to buy a specific quantity.
Look, this is true in every sting, right? In every sting, you're encouraging the commission of a crime, but as long as it's a crime this person would be happy to commit, you know, he's not being induced. If someone comes and wants, you know, 50 grams of coke, crack, he'll do his best to get it. So,
yes, Your Honor.
I don't see the unfairness here.
Well, and that's why it's not entrapment per se. I can't stand here and argue that.
Well, I don't know what's wrong with it. I don't see what's wrong with it, right? He's a major drug. He's a big quantity drug dealer, and they nail him. What?
Well, and it was an issue I felt compelled to raise in conjunction with my second issue, which I think is actually more compelling, which is that they were going to get this guy not only at, you know, whatever it took, but they were going to get him for a decade of dealing. Yes, he was a big-time drug dealer.
Because he admitted that. Because he admitted it, right?
He admitted it, yes, yeah. But we only know that through the pre-sentence report. For whatever reason, and I'm trying to remember the record, and it was an extensive record, I don't think that the officer to whom he admitted this testified to it under oath at the sentencing hearing. Now, the court was very careful, as was the government, to bring in witnesses and conduct an actual hearing on many of these underlying facts. That one was not among them. But, yes, according to the pre-sentence report, he did admit to other conduct.
But, I mean, the law seems to have said for an awfully long time that it's appropriate for court to consider an entire range of sales rather than one individual sale. Because, I mean, that's the point of the drug quantity calculation,
yes,
to distinguish the occasional low-level dealer from someone like Mr. White, who has a more extensive, seemingly unbroken history of narcotic sales.
Yes, but that poses the question, where does relevant conduct end? How far do we take it? I mean, just because he's
get him, I guess,
selling to some people out of Decatur, so what? You know, where do we draw the line geographically? Where do we draw it temporally? Where do we draw it
why,
in
why
terms of
Why do you
want to
draw it at all?
We don't have
understand.
To worry about Mr. White because he's a guy who's selling on an ongoing,
right.
regular basis. I mean, that's, you know, he goes to work every day.
Why would the fact that his activities were geographically extended work in his favor? What sense would that make?
Why would they work in his favor? Well, what's troubling is that the fact that he's dealing just in Decatur, which is one of the arguments that the government makes, that doesn't make this series of transactions related. You know, the fact that he's sitting in one place and people come to him and he deals out of his home or whatever it might be in the town of Decatur doesn't connect all of these disparate acts. I mean, I don't even think you can characterize this as a spree. It's a decade of discrete dealing, and particularly if you look at the latter series of drug deals.
Well, what was your point about geography?
Pardon me, Your Honor?
What was your point about geography?
Well, the court will allow us to consider, allows the trial judge to consider a number of factors in a determination as to whether this is a common scheme or plan, one of which is geography. I think that's dubious. I think that's arbitrary. I'm not sure what the substance is to that particular factor. I could see if these were acts related in time, closely related in time, even within several years, and in happening in one town by one individual, but that wasn't the case here. I mean, the only commonality seems to be that he's in Decatur, Illinois, when he's conducting these transactions. He's conducting the latter series to Mr. Young, who doesn't even know Troy Fuller, who's the informant in the offense of conviction. He doesn't know Mr. Porter. So these guys don't all know each other. I don't know what ties all of these acts together such that we can elevate the sentence to the extent that it is. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Kinster. Mr. Cox?
Good afternoon this time. Just briefly, with regard to the entrapment, obviously, Judge Robner just shook her head.
I'm just clearing my brain.
I'm sorry. The entrapment, with regard to the entrapment claim, this is simply presenting an opportunity, and the defendant took advantage of it. And the government fully admits that its agents told the informant to try to purchase crack cocaine. And this isn't a small-time dealer that somehow the government is escalating the penalties on, and it's somehow unfair. We're talking about a person who, even by statute, was looking at a minimum of 20 years imprisonment. He's someone that the law and that the federal government, quite frankly, should be looking at.
Is it possible that the Supreme Court's forthcoming decision in Kimbrough concerning, you know, crack versus powder disparity might have some basis?
Your Honor, the only way it could have, I tried to think that through. The crack cocaine portion of the sentencing guidelines calculations obviously could go down two levels. I don't think in this case that's enough to affect Mr. White's sentence substantially. He might go down two levels. That's a possibility, because at the upper ranges it has gone down to 4.5 kilograms of cocaine base now to get to level 38. It used to only require 1.5 kilograms. So there in this particular case, I think he was held accountable for plus 3 kilograms of crack cocaine, so I do think it might go down perhaps two levels, but I haven't done the powder cocaine portion of that calculation yet. There mm-hmm. certainly would be that possibility. With regard to the relevant conduct, of course, we're commanded, the district court is commanded to consider relevant conduct. And in Mr. White's case, it just happens to be that it was at least a decade's worth of drug activity, where by his own admission he's regularly going to Chicago and bringing back significant amounts of crack cocaine and powder cocaine to Decatur. And at least in this record, we're only talking about three people that he dealt with: Mr. Fuller, Mr. Porter, who were both out of the picture by 2000 because they've been arrested, and then Mr. Young, who was there in the beginning in 1994 and carries through all the time up until the time of his arrest in May of 2003. So it is an ongoing scheme. It is the same course of conduct. It is exactly what Judge McCuskey found it to be, and we would ask you to affirm. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Cox. Mr. Kister, do you have anything further?
No.
Okay, well, we thank you. You were appointed in both these last two cases, Day and White. We thank you very much for your efforts on behalf of your clients. And the court will stand in recess until some future date.
Do you need help?